This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, and welcome to L&G Talks Asset Management. My name's Andy McCullum, and I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of L&G's asset management business. Today, we're going to be talking about leading through change. And by that, I mean the kind of intense, uncertain, and disruptive change that feels like the norm for many of us these days. We're going to look at it through a number of lenses, through the lens of asset management, the industry itself, through L&G's asset management business and the strategic moves that we're taking to address the change that we're moving through, and also what it means for us as leaders, both individually and for our teams, and how we lead through that change. My guest today has had a ringside seat for a number of years on some of these challenges across the industry. And I'm delighted to welcome Jo McCaffrey, Chief Hi. Strategy and Product Officer of L&G's asset management business. Jo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So, Jo, you've had a kind of ringside seat to some of those themes for many years as a senior leader in the industry. Keen to kind of probe that. But let's just go back, first of all, if you can look back at the kind of early phases of your career. Was there a stage at which you can point to where you thought, I'm going to be a senior leader in asset management?
Candidly, no. I was all set to be a barrister. I was doing law, wanting to be law. I had this vision of doing criminal and family law in the Crown Court with a wig. And then went and did work experience and absolutely hated it. So it's a good endorsement of actually going and trying the job you're thinking about. And after finishing university and you know, realizing that actually I was a good academic lawyer and probably would have been a pretty poor practitioner, sort of fell into asset management. My first role was as an admin assistant to the CEO of iShares when iShares was 15 people in a basement in London. And it was a wonderful introduction to a part of the asset management industry, a part of the financial services industry that ended up being a very happy home for me in the early parts of my career. But it was also really important for laying the foundations of the culture that I ended up loving and then seeking through other roles. So without realizing it, I ended up in a very good place for me. It was a challenger brand. It was a growing business. It was disruptive. It was trying to do things differently. It was heavy on marketing, heavy on brand. And it was really trying to reimagine things for the benefit of the investor. And of course, as a 22-year-old, I had no idea that it was these things. Looking back, you have that perspective. But it was a very happy, fortunate accident that I ended up, because I didn't really know what else to do. You know, going, oh, maybe I'll like temp for a while. And that temp job turned out to be the beginning of a very happy career.
Amazing. So it's had a very sort of true to a squiggly career in terms of found your way by sort of happenstance there. What was it about asset management, the sort of challenges and rewards of asset management that spoke to you?
There was something about the culture. So I was pretty sure I knew a bit about sort of corporate legal culture, and I was pretty sure I didn't want to be in investment banking or markets because it wasn't really the sort of cut and thrust of the markets that excited me. I enjoyed them. I ended up in an ETF business, which is a flow business. It's a market-related business. But what I really loved was the sense of being a fiduciary, and that has stayed with me my entire career. I love the fact that we are in a tremendously privileged position to look after people's most important assets. They are the assets they're putting away for retirement. They are, in the case of insurance, the assets they need to protect so that if they have a fire or a flood or something terrible happens at home, they're able to draw down on that. If something happens in their life, you know, they need somebody that has been a true steward of that capital. And I love the positive ability of capital to make an impact, whether that's through responsible investing, whether that's through good engagement with companies, whether that's through supporting thematic investment, like, you know, changing demographics. That sort of sense of having a real connection to the real world, a connection to individual lives, was a really important and sort of natural fit for me. That said, I don't know if maybe I would have been an amazing investment banker. Maybe I would have also been an amazing sort of IFA. I will never know.
Yep.
But I suspect I've probably found my sweet spot in asset management.
Great. Yeah, well, those sliding doors of your kind of career trajectory.
Exactly.
You certainly landed on something. I'm hearing a real sense of kind of purpose underlying that. So
yeah.
Is the kind of purpose of L&G, what we're trying to do in relation to responsible investing, investing for the long term, is that important to you in terms of where you work?
That's why I'm here, really. Yeah. So I've spent 20 years in asset management now at a variety of different firms, each of which have been, as you would imagine in any firm, sort of a mixture of really positive and some more challenging moments. But the theme throughout has been I have really tried to sort of find a way to activate my purpose. I'm very purpose-driven in how I think about the world, how I want to sort of deploy my skills. And that has been easier and harder in different firms, depending on how aligned I am to the firm's purpose, or in fact, whether the firm has a purpose at all. So for me, it was a very natural step. At this point in my career, I was very focused on this job search in trying to find a firm that really aligned to what I wanted, which was commitment to the long term, commitment to client, a deep sense of engagement in the communities in which we're operating, that we're here not just as an asset manager or an insurer, but we're actually a live participant in an economy that has an impact on people's day-to-day lives. And that's particularly present in the UK, but it's also something we carry through to our more international locations as well. So it's been a very happy experience to come and work at a firm where you feel sort of your shoulders dropping and you can exhale a little bit, where actually there's a very strong alignment of purpose across the firm.
Yeah, yeah, I feel that too. I think that's a similar reason for why I'm here and stay here.
Yeah.
So those 20 years that you've had this sort of ringside seat in some of the biggest players in the industry, what would you say are the kind of key learnings you've taken about leadership in general, in our industry and leadership in general?
It's a good question. The first one I think would be, you know, don't back off the hard decisions. So if I think back to some of the early decisions that Barclays Global Investors at the time, so pre-BlackRock, shout out to the old BGI crew, but when I think back to the early commitment that senior managers at BGI made to ETFs, when really they had no business making those decisions, the clients weren't ready, the market was kind of skeptical. But the deep commitment early and then the consistency of the expression of that commitment through funding and hiring and brand and everything else, they really believed and they went for it. And it built them the sort of juggernaut and the market leader that is iShares today, as well as being the underpinning for a new industry, right? A deeply disruptive in a positive way industry. Similarly, on a smaller scale, if I think about my time at sort of State Street, they made decisions very early about things like wanting to strengthen the technology and the sort of industrial nature of the investment platform. That was not particularly glamorous, but was something they really believed in. And it was, you know, by nature part of their business because they were running such a large pool of assets in a systematic way. And again, not very glamorous, but really bore out in terms of then the ability for them to grow and to grow in a sustainable way. So it was a great example of, you know, we are all guilty sometimes of saying, well, this is a big decision, or it involves a big spend, let's just defer it, let's see what happens, let's see if we can sort of nickel and dime it in the beginning. But actually, having the courage of your convictions and really committing to that early and consistently is really important. The other thing I think I'd take from as a big lesson is the fact that culture really underpins everything. So the small elements of culture, the day-to-day, how we talk to each other as colleagues, how we disclose things, how we admit if we've made a mistake, whether we trust each other to consult on a topic, whether we admit if we don't know the answer. That is the cultural underpinning, not just for great fiduciary and control culture, but also for great asset management. And I think in the different firms I've been at, I've seen pockets of really fantastic, positive culture, and they have gone hand in hand with business and investment performance. And where I've seen really unpleasant and difficult culture, it has gone hand in hand with poor outcomes for investment performance and poor outcomes for the corporate. And no firm is ever 100% one or the other, but you can spot the hotspots of where you're going to see poorer performance or difficulties, and they generally line up pretty well against where you've got cultural issues.
Yeah, they make sense. And it makes me think of kind of Patrick Lencioni's five dysfunctions of a team, which is kind of in his central hypothesis, which is you've got all the technical skills you want in a company, but it's teamwork. And the culture that supports that is the thing you can't buy in.
Yeah.
You've got to work at it. And a lot of it is small, granular, day-to-day interactions where you've got to really focus.
Yeah.
And I know we in L&G are using that kind of framework in terms of the behaviours.
Yeah, you've done a big transformation in marketing over the last year. Do you want to talk a bit about that? Like, how have you thought about how you drive, you know, systemic performance in a team like marketing from the culture that you're building from the ground up?
Yeah, thank you. It's a really good question. So we've been engaged in a sort of marketing transformation program for the last 7 years or so.
Yeah.
But my central insight in leading that is great marketing doesn't come down to the quality of your individual stars in the team or the size of your budget or the agencies you use. What it comes down to is the hard yards, precisely to your point, of setting up an operational model that kind of works, and then you create the culture within the team that is collaborative, does the right thing, delivers the firm the economies of scale of one big machine, but with the collaboration and fungibility, which is just where the magic happens, because so much of marketing is horizontal. It's about drawing together multiple disciplines, and fragmentation is always the kind of enemy of that. You've also sort of been in seats, you know, during some real sort of tumultuous sort of periods of change and challenge. What have you learned about leading through those kind of periods?
I have, and some of them have been sort of self-generated and others have been market-generated. And once you've been in financial services for a period of time, you've all gone through difficult market turns and more acute sort of firm-specific things. The most, I think, acute learning that I've had from that is that when things are really very difficult, your primary and really only responsibility is to maintaining the sort of psychological health and containment of your team and of the business more generally. If I think about the things that I care deeply about, maintaining good investor outcomes, looking after our clients, thinking about, you know, maintaining a fantastic control culture, all of which get put under strain in periods of real stress and market volatility, all of that depends on your team being able to continue to operate and perform. And when stress is that acute and the feeling of it being sort of systemic and external to things that most of our colleagues can control day to day, the most important thing that leaders can do is to help them feel grounded and that they've got somebody that they can ask for advice, that they're able to continue to do their job well, that they can focus on looking after the client or looking after the portfolio. And that we try as best we can to sort of do that enabling and protect them from as much of the exogenous shocks as possible. That said, there are some shocks that are big enough, whether it's market or not, or corporate, that they sort of inveigle their way into the entire business and you have to deal with them. So there, I think the most important thing is you have to talk to people as adults. You have to be honest with them about the things you know and the things you don't. And to build a culture where it's okay for that to be uncertain for a while. You don't want it to stay in limbo, but to really offer an authentic partnership with your staff of all levels, they're all feeling it, even the senior ones, to be able to give them a place where they can sort of help to process what's happening so that they can help run their teams or whatever else it is. But it is so important that you're able to engage authentically with your teams at that moment to say that, yes, it's also, I am stressed. I am finding it difficult. Let's think about that together. And how do we how do we get through it in the most effective way for our clients and our shareholders?
So you manage a kind of hugely powerful sort of portfolio in the middle of L&G's asset management business, covering strategy, product, marketing, business intelligence, market insight. So can you tell me what your sort of vision is for that sort of function? And how do you, what kind of moves are you making day to day to make them really fire?
So you're right. It's a wonderfully diverse portfolio, which suits me and my varied interests. So I have our sort of creative central teams, and the way that we think about it, if you think about the product line, our marketing and our brand efforts around how we communicate with our clients and our shareholders and stakeholders more broadly, and the strategy. So what are we trying to do and how are we doing it? Tied together with a rich sense of, you know, what everybody else is doing and what market we're operating in. Really, how I see our job is to be sort of the metabolizing force in the middle of the business that takes all of our investment skill and insight and forethought about the markets and excellence in risk management, and helping to metabolize that into something that is usable and of utility for clients in whatever they're trying to do in their investment portfolios. And that might be saving to help their children go to university with our wealth clients, or it might be maximizing returns for a pension fund, or it might be helping a very complex institutional client manage liabilities.
So, I mean, looking at those kind of component parts, the strategy is interesting, right? So you've been driving forward a sort of buy, build, partner
yeah.
kind of model, or build, buy, partner.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the latter. So we've done a lot of work on partnership. We've had some really interesting announcements in terms of Blackstone, Manulife,
yeah.
along with acquisitions as well in the form of Proprium. How important are they to achieving our objectives going forward, Jo?
Yeah, they're critical, and we're thrilled and delighted to have such good partners. And we have different types of partners across the business, but the two that we've announced recently are multi-year, multi-parts of our business, hopefully multi-billion dollar partnerships with both Manulife and Blackstone. And they're quite different as partners in both, you know, the business models and the cultures of the firms and the way that we work with them. But at the center of it is a Venn diagram around culture. So we talked a bit about the culture of L&G earlier, and we won't partner with people that aren't of a cultural Venn with us. We feel deeply about, you know, long-term thinking, commitment to clients, commitment to excellence. And there are lots of firms that I think would say that they do that, but they do it in a very culturally different way than us. And the reality is, here you are kind of getting married a little bit. You are spending a lot of time with these people. You are talking to your shared clients with them. You're introducing each other to each other's clients. Potentially, you're co-creating product together, you're investing capital with each other. So the trust levels have to be really as high as possible, because you're working for firms that usually in some places compete. You're highly complementary, hopefully, but you're also acknowledging that in this partnership, we're going to manage and think about the fact that we're competing in some areas, but in most areas, actually, we can help each other succeed. So if I think about, you asked about kind of a day in the life, one of the joys of my job is the variety. So I might spend time thinking with partners or putting partnerships together. So for quite a lot of time last year, I was squirreled away in a room with a deal team thinking about partnerships. But once it's public, it's lovely. I can then come out of the room and be with the team again. But we're thinking about, okay, what's next for the partnership? Should we be thinking about investing in products together, co-creating products together? What is, you know, your corporate priority, and how can we support that? And what's ours, and how can you support us? And then connected to both product and marketing, we're thinking about what products do we need to deliver? Do we have existing products that would be great for them, and vice versa? And then also, how do we reflect this deep sense of partnership that we have in partnering with our clients, with trusted firms like Manulife and Blackstone? How do we articulate that through our brand and with our clients so that they understand that it's additive and it's not dilutive to our relationships with them?
Asset management is a kind of highly commoditized, competitive market. So
yeah.
How do we differentiate ourselves as a firm in terms of the balance, right?
Is
there something in the product strategy that, you know, that about innovating that is sustainable?
Yeah.
Or is it about the way we market? Or is it both?
I think it's a multi-pronged approach. So if we think about what's happening in the asset management market at the moment, we have large systemic themes that are driving really quite radical changes to asset management business models. So the first is obviously consolidation. Everybody is thinking about it. Everybody's talking about it. But it is harder and harder because of cost pressure, another theme, to run asset managers profitably. And so in order to be profitable, you have to be bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, some would say that there are always going to be opportunities for small, very select managers that do one thing and do it really well at good margin. But for everybody aiming to do sort of more than one thing, it is becoming harder and harder. And so scale becomes a really important part. So consolidation is driving a lot of behaviors. The other thing that's really difficult is it's becoming more competitive. And that's partly because clients are no longer willing to do due diligence on 30 asset managers. They really want five that they are going to, you know, do as many things as possible with, if that. And therefore, that driving competition means that you have to be more differentiated, you have to have more innovation, and your client service and the solutions that you can provide need to be broader and more holistic. So in order for asset managers to be able to provide those solutions, they need to be able to either build them, buy them, or partner in order to get access to them, which is sort of at the core of our growth strategy. And then if I think about client dynamics, our clients are also going through massive transformational change. If we think about pensions regulation, if we think about the way wealth managers are organized, if we think about how retail investment is changing, the increase in digital, the increase in direct consumer and the disintermediation of a lot of services and products, our clients' businesses are going through radical change and we need to adapt with them. We need to continue to adapt our business to support them as they change shape. Now, that's very difficult. They are changing shape at an amazing pace as we are changing shape. So we're having to sort of morph twice. But it is a tremendous opportunity for those asset managers that can really root themselves in our investors and in our clients to be able to change with them and to enable whatever their sort of next stage of growth will be.
What one piece of leadership advice would you give to anyone in a kind of position where they're having to manage that kind of in perpetuity kind of change that you describe? What's the one key thing?
To be yourself. Okay. I think you can't, the old adage that you need to be yourself because everybody else is taken. you can't manage this level of, in my view, you can't manage this level of change. You can't create and run high-performing teams if you're trying to be somebody else the whole time. It's too much of an emotional ask to try and be somebody else. And with that comes the horrifying realization that not everybody is going to be your biggest fan, and that that's okay. Not everyone is for everyone, but that actually if you're, you know, always respectful, a good person and trying your best to deliver value, that to be yourself is even if someone would choose not to go for a pint with you, they respect you and they can work with you as a good colleague. And then you'll also attract people that are your people that do believe in that sort of authentic leadership. So yes, it is a journey to get there as a senior leader, but the only person you can be is yourself. So you may as well be the best version you can.
100%. Love that. Thank you. I feel like we could keep talking, Jo, but in the interest of time, we're going to up stumps and call it a day there. I want to say thank you very much. It's been a brilliant conversation.
Thank you.
Such an interesting range of kind of topics across leadership, change, the asset management industry, what we're doing in L&G.
Yeah.
The exciting moves we're taking. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for your time.
Thank you to everybody for listening. Now, that's the end of this episode of L&G Talks Asset Management. I hope you can join us next time. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an alternative investment fund manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.